huge studios right now are basing their decisions as to whether or not they are renewing seasons of shows that you like based upon watch time. So as we were looking at all the different factors, what makes a video go viral, the biggest component for us is how long did somebody watch that video?
Welcome to the Imperfectly Empowered Podcast with DIY healthy lifestyle blogger, Anna Fulmer, empowering you to transform your life. One imperfect day at a time.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Imperfectly Empowered Podcast. I am your host, Anna Fulmer. Today we have the Hillary Billings on the show. Hillary is a viral video creator. She has over 1 billion views on TikTok. And she has a business called Attentioneers, where they help other brands like you and I drive exponential growth through short form content. She is a former Miss Nevada, TV producer, celebrity interviewer, and she is here to share the science behind viral content and how her company, Attentioneers, can help you create your next viral video. Welcome, expert Hillary Billings.
How are you?
Good. How are you? Look at that background. Are those all electric guitars?
They are. This is Marshall's office, and so
That's so cool.
He has the sick setup. So we're stealing it today for this interview.
Are those? I'm trying to figure out what the pictures are.
Those are actually albums. They're vinyl.
Are they okay?
Records. Yeah.
That is so the coolest thing. I love.
How are you doing today?
I'm wonderful. The day before Thanksgiving, here we are.
Here we are. Time to put on those extra stretchy pants.
That's right. I love me some good stretchy pants. There's so many things I cannot wait to learn from you. I in the intro, I talked about how you've got like so many different elements to your story. And I always love pressing the rewind button because it's so fun to hear how people's beginnings got them to where they are today. Because it's not like, you know, you turn 10 years old and decide, I'm going to become an expert on viral video content for TikTok.
Yeah, that wasn't even an option.
No. I don't know how old you are, but we're probably not that different. And like, oh my gosh, this stuff wasn't even...
No.
We're playing with Barbie dolls.
Yeah, you're going to be an expert in something that doesn't exist yet.
Isn't that terrifying? Oh my gosh. Oh, that's a terrifying thought. So let's press the rewind button a little bit and tell us how so many elements of your story between the Miss Nevada pageant and, I mean, you had some incredible experiences even before that happened. Yeah. So just give us a little bit of your background, the Hillary Billings autobiography 2.0. Y'all heard it here first.
Gosh, my life has been a happy accident when it comes to all of my success. That's how I look at it. I originally got my degree in psychology. I wanted to be a clinical psychologist and focus and get my PhD focused on body image and eating disorders. I was a model in high school and college, and I found the world so fascinating because even, you know, these beautiful women that I'd be working with at the highest levels when, you know, Italian Vogue magazine or Elle magazine, they all had something that they disliked about themselves still. And they were the ones that were being photographed and put in the magazines to tell other women what they should aspire to look and be like and create more body dissatisfaction. So I was super interested in that world. And I was the number one graduate of my university. And then I went on to be rejected from 14 graduate school programs that I applied to. And I thought my life was over at that point in time. So I did what any normal person would do in that circumstance. I took off to Nicaragua. I started a travel blog. And I just decided that was going to be my documenting the downfall of my life. And it was all over for me.
In Nicaragua, in Spanish.
In Nicaragua, exactly. I went to a surf retreat with a pro surfer, and it was the first time in my life where I had met a group of other women. I was the youngest one on that retreat at the time, and they all were so empowered and so confident in themselves. And it was the first environment where I wasn't in direct competition with these other women. And it was so weird to be in a perspective shift of, oh, I don't have to be everything to everyone. I can surround myself with women that have skills and knowledge and wisdom that I don't have. And then together, when our powers unite, like Captain Planet, we can make amazing things happen.
So you're in Nicaragua, all these life lessons coming your way. And then how did we get from Nicaragua to Miss Nevada to where we are today.
Where we are now.
Yeah. To the amazing Hillary Billings, who was always amazing.
So from Nicaragua, I met this incredible woman. She was my cabana mate, and she was Fijian. And shortly after we left that trip, she was unfortunately killed in a car crash in Jamaica. It was her last stop before she was heading back home to Fiji. She hadn't seen her family in about, I think, 6 months or a year. She'd been traveling extensively. She was such a light. And it was very hard on all of us that had spent this time with her. As you know, any time that you are with a group of people bonding, especially in another environment, like being out of the country, doing wild things like volcano boarding and horseback riding on the beach and learning how to surf and sharing your deep vulnerabilities with each other. It's a really interlocking experience. So I found her family at the time through Facebook and emailed her brother and sent them photos and thanked them for sacrificing time with her so we could get to know her. Fast forward 6 months, he emails me back and says, you know, I don't know if you knew this, and I didn't, but they were one of the three chiefly families of Fiji. So there's three, they oversee the different islands, and they are of the Firewalker clan, which claims to be the originators of the practice of walking on hot coals. So he invited me out to come meet the family, which at the time I was like, I am a broke 20 something. There is no way I can afford to go to Fiji. That's for honeymooners. And just, you know, divine timing and one thing after the next, I ended up on a flight to Fiji 6 months later. I spent a month living with the Firewalkers, and that was an incredible experience. And so I just gotten back from that, and there was so much to process. I was having a really hard time assimilating back to life in the US, and a friend of mine was having a 4th of July party, and she asked me to come. And it was one of those weird days where everything was going wrong. I couldn't find my keys. I broke a glass. I stepped on the glass. I couldn't find the bra that I wanted to wear, which I know sounds weird, but I ended up wearing the super push-up Victoria's Secret bra. I was really upset about it. I was really uncomfortable. And we go to this party, and the first firework of the night that they light off, I'd been kind of wary. She wanted me to help her set up the fireworks, and I didn't want to touch them. I'd never been weird about fireworks before. The first one goes up, and the fuse goes in, burns up, and nothing happens, and everyone gets quiet, because we know that when the fuse goes up, that's when the firework should explode. And if it doesn't, then something's wrong. And of course, now you have a live firework, so no one can go see what's going on. The firework explodes. It malfunctions. The fuse travels up in the air. It's on fire. It travels 30 feet. It curves back around. It hits my cheek and goes down my shirt. And I ended up suffering second and third degree burns to my chest and my stomach. And thank God I wore that Victoria's Secret push-up bra, because that firework just ate the whole thing away. And if it hadn't been there, I don't know what I would look like today. But it was quite a shock. You know, ended up in the ER. Doctors didn't know what my healing time would look like. They didn't know if I'd look normal. The chest, funny fact, is the slowest healing part of the body. So while my face healed within a matter of days, they had no idea how long it would take or if it would keloid. And I felt very ashamed and embarrassed through this whole process. So I didn't tell anyone. I was still blogging about, you know, past travels that I'd had in the past year. And only my immediate circle here in Vegas knew what was happening. And it was about New Year's going into 2013. I was hired for some modeling event, and I was so excited. And I put on this little black dress that they had given me to wear. And I turned around and saw myself in the mirror, and I just broke down, because I could just see the scars, and I felt so ugly and unfeminine. And I just kind of had it with myself of being in this place that I was tired of throwing myself a pity party. I was tired of feeling bad about myself. And the one thing that I'd really learned from my travels was that I needed to put myself in uncomfortable situations and find a way to make them comfortable as a way to find self-growth. And that was a really easy pattern for me to get into in order to move myself to the next level. So I thought about it. Nothing sounded more uncomfortable than being on stage in a bikini and having someone judge me based upon my appearance. Right. So I entered a pageant. Never had done one before.
That's hilarious. That's definitely what I do when I'm uncomfortable. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. It's just, you know, we got that Thanksgiving meal. Let's just all go get in bikinis.
Right, right.
It was a wild experience. I had so many preconceived notions about what it meant to be a pageant girl. And I was
congeniality. That's exactly. All my education.
Yes. I was the Gracie Lou Freebush of my class. Yeah.
Just a light jacket.
Just a light jacket. Exactly. The perfect date. I ended up saying the words world peace in my onstage question. And I was so like, I couldn't, the inner monologue that I was having while I was talking was like, well, why are you saying this? This is so, stop it. Oh my gosh, you sound so awful right now. And yeah. I was convinced in that moment that I lost, but it didn't really matter to me at that moment in time. Like I had gone in with the goal of I am going to do this to help my self-confidence and to move past this traumatic moment. So it didn't matter to me what happened after the fact. And in fact, I wasn't prepared to be crowned. And so when I was very shocked, and it became such a whirlwind. We had 6 weeks before we left for nationals, and I competed in the swimsuit prelims a year to the day that I was burned, July 4th mm-hmm. of 2013. And so, yeah, then I was Miss Nevada. And then that was a whole new experience of getting to leverage that, to be involved in my communities, work with the Burn Foundation and the Burn Institute mm-hmm. and Camp Beyond the Scars, which is a summer camp for children that are burn survivors. And it was a wonderful time. Shortly after we came back from nationals, I was awarded a best blogging award by a big entertainment magazine here in Vegas. And then about a week later, I got a phone call from USA Today asking if I'd be interested in coming on as their, you know, head journalist for Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. So I began, having never had any experience doing professional journalism and only doing my travel blog, I said yes and freaked out later. And I began my...
It's a good plan, really. It's exactly. Not a bad idea. Just say yes, freak out later. You'll figure it
exactly.
out.
Exactly. So I started writing for them. And then I think I was a week or two into my trial, and they called again. And the iHeartRadio Music Festival was coming up, and they really wanted to send me as their on-camera host. And mm-hmm. having never done that before either, I said, sure, I can totally do that. That'd be great.
Freak out later. Yeah.
Hung up the phone, freak out later. We'll just freak out. They sent their top music journalist to essentially babysit me. He was so kind, and they didn't know if I was going to be any good and wanted to make sure they had someone else there. And he has been such a great friend and close mm-hmm. mentor for years now. He was actually the first person that Taylor Swift followed on Twitter. So they've had a close relationship over the years. And my first interview on the red carpet was with Ryan Seacrest. So no pressure, just the
interviewing an interviewer. I mean, that's what I'm doing right now. I'm basically interviewing an expert interviewer. So
exactly.
There you go.
And it was, I'm so grateful though that I had that experience, because it really set the tone for the quality of interviewing that I wanted to do, how I wanted to make people feel when I talked to them. And it was just a wild ride ever since. So I kept doing red carpet interviewing, celebrity interviews, behind the scenes, still writing as well, but mostly transitioning into on-camera work. I started producing for E! News. And it was a wild ride. And at some point a few years later, I got this idea that I wanted to be a songwriter, and I was going to switch careers and move to Nashville and have this glamorous, songwriting career that I'd seen on the ABC show Nashville. Mm. And I picked up and I moved to Nashville, and I learned fairly quickly that it was not the lifestyle that I wanted. I was very frustrated by people telling me that it's a 10-year town and that you have to just put in the work, and then maybe mm-hmm. someone will hear your songs, and then maybe someone will give you a $14,000 a year right. publishing deal, and then maybe one of your songs will get picked up by an artist, and then maybe they'll record it, and then maybe it'll go on the record, and then maybe it'll be a single, and then maybe you can make some money.
That's kind of the whole performing arts world. It's like a whole lot of maybes. You have to just love it and be willing to live on a very low, low income.
So this was something that really frustrated me, that there were so many gatekeepers, and that I was not in control of my own success. Like, even if I wrote the best songs, it was possible that I may never see that success, or it would take 10 years to have my first break. And it just seemed illogical to me, coming from somebody that, I had a full academic ride. I had interviewed all these people. It's like, when there's a will, there's a way. We're going to figure this out in a different methodology. And I think it was around 2016. It had to have been during the election, because I was having these strange experiences being a Hillary during the year of an election. Mm. And anytime I'd introduce myself, people would have some funny joke that they thought to say back of like, oh, I'm voting for you, or I'm with you, or I hate you, or you're the one trying to take away my guns. And I thought it was such an interesting concept of how we put these preconceived notions on people just because they share a name, or, they look like somebody, or what have you. Mm. So So I pitched to USA Today, who I was still working for at the time, to do this little video comedic monologue about what it's like being a Hillary during the year of an election. And they liked it, but they didn't really have a place for it. And I shopped it to a couple other outlets and it didn't really land. So I'm like, okay, well, I guess I'll do it myself. And I was in New York at the time. I grabbed two lamps and I set them up and I put my camera against, you know, I don't know, a box on like a piano. Yeah. And I just recorded, I made this little script and I recorded it and threw it up on the internet. And it actually did pretty well. And so I started making more of these scripts and little comedic monologue videos. And then through that process, I ended up getting approached by a friend of mine who was now working as a Facebook publisher, asking if he could share out one of my videos. And he did. And then that video went viral, which was why having a girlfriend's like having a cat and all the similarities between females and felines. And that's also funny enough how my now boyfriend and business partner, Marshall, found me. Was one of his old lawyer buddies had shared a video of mine on the internet. And he's like, who is this girl? And
so it's paid off in many ways is what we're saying.
Exactly. But it also was the first time that I realized that I had more accountability and control over my content. Not only could I say what I wanted and edit it in the manner that I wanted to, but I could immediately reach an audience that I wanted to reach by going through social media. And so that was a big moment for me of like, oh my gosh, I actually get to be in control. Instead of waiting for someone else to say yes, I just bypass the gatekeepers and I'll make my own audience. So this publisher, after we had a couple videos do well, he reached out about me continuing to get my own Facebook page and do viral video content. So I kind of dove headfirst into this weird viral video world where we did all sorts of things from big gifting videos and pranks to, you know, DIY. And it wasn't necessarily the content that I loved personally, but it really took the opportunity, you know, we called it getting me Augie'd, of learning the psychology of attention and what it takes to make a good video. And even though we didn't have huge followings, how we could work within the algorithms to make the content take off and how we could structure a video. So, you know, a billion views later, we realized that we really had figured out a science behind going viral and being able to do it again and again and again. And that there were certain things, you know, whether it's online or offline, that you can do to help garner the psychology of attention. And so I had dragged my boyfriend now at the time, Marshall, kicking and screaming into doing viral content with me because I needed help. And he is, you know, a screenwriter and director. And so he's an artiste and did not and kind of looked down his nose at me of doing these videos. And then once we started to see some success and the checks started coming in, he was like, okay, I can do this too.
Yeah. That sounds about right. Let me see the money and then I'll support you. It's like, no, come on. Yeah,
exactly.
I love it.
Exactly.
So I have to ask, what did you learn as an interviewer? Can you think of any poignant experiences where you were like, I will never make that mistake again, or I will always do that as an interviewer? What kind of pointers did you learn? Because I've always said that. So interestingly, before becoming a podcast host, I worked in emergency medicine for 10 years.
Oh, and wow.
Yeah. So I'm a nurse practitioner by trade and education. And the art of asking better questions is the answer to a whole lot of things in life. But I love, so I really, that prepared me to be a podcast interviewer.
Yes.
But I'm curious in your experience, because obviously my interview experience was very, very, very different than a red carpet interview experience. But I think there's probably some interesting crossover. But just for people listening, share some of your experiences interviewing and things that you learned, takeaway, things that you don't recommend.
Totally. And I think, you know, something that you said is so important in life in general, but especially for interviews, is like, if you ask crappy questions, you're going to get crappy answers. So, and I saw a lot of hosts on the carpet who would ask very bad questions or, you know, questions in poor taste. And I think the first thing that I learned, and I'm so grateful to Brian Mansfield and for USA Today for this in general, because this was very much at the ethos of the company at the time, was that long-term relationships mattered more than getting the end of the story. Like, yeah, we wanted to be the ones to break something, of course, but that long-term relationship was going to serve hundreds of articles and hundreds of updates and allow us, you know, a relationship and access long term that we needed to make sure we preserved. And so above all else, that was what USA Today wanted to be known for, was being an outlet that, again, at the time, was really about strong relationships. And even if we were to say something about somebody, you know, that maybe wasn't putting them in the best light, we try to do it in a very fair way.
Sure. Because that's real life. Like it's
It's still a person. Yeah. It's still a company and that you have to deal with. And so taking that into consideration from day one, even though I wanted to do a great job on the carpet and it would have been great to get some of these huge, you know, bigger interviews, I saw Brian be pulled by managers, in two different rooms and given extra time because of existing relationships that he had with artists and with celebrities. And that was something that I really wanted to create. So with that in mind, you know, when you're a no name, it's really important that you do your homework. And I would spend a lot, I mean, I was really grateful for my background in psychology and, you know, being a journalist, that I would spend a lot of time doing research on anybody that was going to come down the carpet, that we had a list of any of the call sheets. I would carry a giant binder with me with a breakdown of questions I would ask those people, any news updates, relevant photos, and really doing all this work on the front end to make, even if it was a 3 minute or a minute and a half interview, to make that seamless. Because, you know, what you want to do is people will never remember what you say to them. They will never remember the questions that you ask unless it's something really traumatic, but they will remember how you made them feel. And you want them to feel like you have considered them for a long period of time. And that was something that was very important to me. I wanted these celebrities, I wanted these artists to know that I had taken into consideration what they were working on, what mattered to them, how we could make this interview a win for everybody and everybody get the content that they wanted. And I saw massive results from that. I remember I interviewed Weezer and I had some friends that were huge Weezer fans. And so before, well, once we'd set up the interview time, I forget if it was for the Grammys or iHeartRadio or what, but I went to them and I was like, okay, Weezer fans, what would you like to know? And they were able to pull questions, you know, from way back in the catalog that I probably wouldn't have come up with myself. But just by doing that, they were so excited. And afterwards, they told me what an incredible, you know, interview it was. I had a similar situation with Train and then Train's manager. A lot of these managers also rep other artists. And so, you know, Train apparently couldn't stop talking about the interview that we did in their dressing room. And so then their manager took every other artist that they had to me because they knew it would be a nice experience. And then when they came back in town a month or so later, they were willing to do more. And so suddenly we're doing wine tastings because they have a wine line and we're at Wine Amplified and we're just having a lot of fun and getting the chance to continue to grow this relationship. And
integrity is what I'm hearing there. It's really a sense of integrity that ultimately you're looking out for the person that's probably going to yield more impact.
Hey, parents.
Yeah, you.
Are you looking for a podcast your kids will really love?
Well, we made one just for you.
And for us.
As genuine, all-natural kids ourselves, we know what makes a fun and interesting podcast.
So we decided to make it ourselves. Every show is packed with interviews, stories, and on-the-ground reporting.
We have interviewed everyone from scientists to Grammy Award-winning musicians to NFL quarterbacks.
Listen to Wild Interest wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, and I will remember I had one interview with one actress and we didn't know that she was coming for the carpet. So I did a brief, you know, Google search before she arrived. And at the time I was reporting for the Life section of USA Today. And it was something around like, is she dating a co-star? Is she not? And usually I try to stay away from those questions, but I ended up asking and she was already kind of not happy to be there. You could tell that it was already not kicking off on the right foot. And I asked her the question. She gave a very great, empowering answer. And then the camera turned off and she was just very unhappy and she let me know it. And I apologized. And I reached out to my mentor to say, what could we have done differently? And he's like, you know, just the only thing we could have asked for is for talking points in the future if they don't want to talk about something like that. The other reporters that were around me, you know, from huge outlets were all like, I would ask the same question. So don't feel bad. But I really took that moment to heart. And it, you know, as his time has gone on, she's come out to say that that was a very, you know, emotional time for her. And so I think I was just kind of a byproduct of being there in the moment. But it was a nice reinforcement of let's not jeopardize a situation for the headline that might
for the story. Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Relationship over sensational story.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, speaking of doing research, I love to find little tidbits of people before they come on. And you have, there's a love of your life who I'm sure that you love your boyfriend as well, but this one has four legs and shares the same name as my third child. So tell us really quickly a little bit about Lily and your, yeah, look how happy she is. You can't see it if you're just listening, but she's glowing. She's glowing. Now, I just want to point out, she did not look like this when she talked about her boyfriend. So I don't know. Just take that for what it is.
He's great. Yes. Well, it's funny. He's very supportive of me having Lily. And, you know, even though he blacks out a little bit when we talk about horse prices and just the whole process. And,
right.
Oh, she's amazing. She is a 12-year-old Belgian warm blood.
She's so pretty.
Thank you. I got her in March, and my 8-year-old inner child is just screaming at the top of her lungs, because this has been something that I've wanted since I was 3. And to be an adult and to be able to have made it happen with my own money and my own time, it's so special. And I never take it for granted. I always had told myself growing up, you know, we didn't have the money for me to ride. So I would work at the barn and I'd muck stalls and groom horses in order to exchange for lessons. And I got good at riding because I had to ride whatever was available. Mm-hmm. But there's something really special about being able to have my own horse now after years of saying, I don't need that. It's okay. You know, it's maybe one day, but it's not a necessity. And yeah, it's just been such a fantastic ride to be able to grow and learn with her. And we just went to our first big show together and jumped around, and she's learning her new job working with me, and I'm learning how to work with her. And it's been a really special experience.
Oh, she's so pretty. I love horses. My sister-in-law is actually an equestrian. She's been a trainer for an Olympic equestrian for years. Yeah, she majored in equestrian studies.
So she jumps. Is it dressage or show jumping?
Dressage. Mm-hmm.
Nice. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Yeah. Beautiful animals.
We love the horses. Yay! Well, we will dive into Hillary's expertise here. We are going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to play a quick speed round of this or that with Hillary, get to know her a little bit more. And then we're going to dive into her expert advice on the science of viral videos and how your next video could be the beginning of the end, right when we come back.
You have tried it all. Worried you will never lose the extra weight or reclaim the energy you once enjoyed? Want to achieve fat loss without spending hours in a gym or eliminating entire food groups from your diet? Well, now you can. In the virtual Faster Way to Fat Loss with Anna, my 6-week fitness and nutrition program, you will learn how to pair effective 30-minute workouts with all-natural, evidence-based nutritional strategies to leverage what you eat and when you eat to reset your metabolism and burn fat fast, even that stubborn belly fat. I am a dual-certified nurse practitioner passionate about teaching sustainable strategies to promote fat loss and prevent disease. I have cheered on thousands of clients who have done just that with the Faster Way program. In my 6-week program, the average client currently sheds 7 inches of body fat. 93% report more energy, and 89% state that their mental health has improved. 100% of clients report they feel this program is sustainable. Curious to try the program but not sure if the strategies will work for you? Try the Faster Way strategies for free. Head to www.hammersandhugs.com and sign up for my free 7-day fat loss accelerator course today and start your own transformation story.
We are back here with Hillary Billings. All right, Hillary, we're going to play a quick speed round of this or that. Two options, no stress. Here we go. Would you rather cake or pie?
Pie.
What's your favorite pie in all the world?
Probably cherry. I love a good cherry pie. But we're also in, you know, if you're listening to this around the season, it's Thanksgiving. So pumpkin pie is also a nice, tasty treat.
Do you have a favorite pie? Have you ever had Costco's pumpkin pie?
I have. I'm now gluten-free. So unfortunately, I've had to move away from, but yes, it is so tasty. We now get our pies from True Food, if you're familiar with them.
How do they make the pie gluten-free, the crust?
It's a gluten-free crust of some sort.
Does it actually taste good?
It tastes amazing. It's a squash pie.
Ooh, that does sound good. Okay. So where is it from? For people listening, we'll put it in the show
notes. True Food. If you have a True Food. It's a very tasty, healthy restaurant, and they've got chains all over the country. Yes, go to True Food Kitchen, get yourself a squash pie, and it comes with coconut whipped cream.
Ooh, that all sounds very good. Okay, True Food. We have so many food recommendations on the show. I love it.
I'm here for it.
We love food over here. Okay. Yes. Would you rather attend a musical or a play?
Ooh, depends on the musical or the play. I'm more inclined to say musical.
Okay.
Because there's usually they're fun and they're upbeat. And when I was living in New York, I got to see a lot of incredible Broadway musicals. So can't ever say no to that.
So speaking of shows, you're in Las Vegas.
Yes.
If somebody is going to go to Las Vegas, what is the show they must see?
There's so many good ones.
She just died inside because she's like, oh, one. I can't do one.
It depends upon what you're looking for. But this is something that I talked about a lot when I was, you know, working as USA Today's Las Vegas Insider. I'm a big Beatles fan. So the Love Show at Mirage, which I don't know if it's going to be staying for much longer with the new Hard Rock coming in. So if you haven't seen it, this is the time, because who knows if it'll still be around. The Michael Jackson One Show, if you're a Michael Jackson fan, is phenomenal. If you are more of like a traditional Cirque show kind of person, Oh at the Bellagio is just incredible. You've got beautiful water and artistry. Gosh. And then we get so many acts that are coming in that do residencies. Yeah. So, you know, Adele's got one going on right now, which is fantastic. And, you know, Celine Dion's done a residency here, and Elton John's done one. And so I think the cool thing about Vegas is that you have the opportunity to have the best food and have the best entertainment in one place. And you can do a lot of it within a couple of days. So,
okay. So we just mentioned food again. Where is your number one favorite food place for people in Las Vegas? This is where
it's so hard.
She's like, I'm never coming back onto the show again. I can't answer these questions.
I should have come with a spreadsheet and been like, okay, let's walk through. You know, I was just at a bachelorette party this past weekend, and Lotus of Siam, which has been a local favorite for a number of years.
Lotus of Siam, like S-I-A-M?
Lotus of Siam. Okay. Incredible Thai food. They have a location down on the strip, and they just opened a location at Red Rock Casino, which is incredible. The ambiance is phenomenal. The food and portions are perfect. They have incredible desserts, a coconut ice cream, which I'm a huge fan of. They had like fried bananas, which is just so good. Amazing.
They did not pay her to say all this, by the way.
They didn't, but they should have. I would like some sort of sponsored opportunity, please.
Seriously. Come on, yes, Lotus.
Big fan of what they're doing. And there's also at the Red Rock an incredible steakhouse called T-Bones, which has been a staple of Vegas culture for years. And if you love steakhouses downtown, the Golden Steer, which is not in a hotel. It is in a little hole in the wall, kind of right off of Sahara and Las Vegas Boulevard, across from the Sahara Hotel and Stratosphere. But it is incredible food. And if a little bit of history, it was one of the places where the Rat Pack would hang out. And they still have the booth where Frank Sinatra would sit in. So you get a little bit of that vibe. And I don't think they've changed much on the interior as well. So it's a great place to go for that Vegas history if you're interested.
And what was that one called again?
The Golden Steer.
The Golden Steer. Well, listen, you guys just got like a free, like, consider this your travel agency.
Here for it.
101 in Las Vegas.
Yes.
Oh, and now my mouth is watering. sticking with the entertainment realm, this is always so interesting to me. People feel real passionate about this. I don't know if you're a movie goer or not, but at the movies, candy or popcorn?
So I am a candy girl. Marshall is a extra large popcorn with extra butter.
And what's your go-to candy? Everyone always has a go-to movie candy.
I am a Sour Patch Kids.
Yeah.
Candy goer. I always have been, probably always will be. Those are the Reese's Pieces. Those are good ones. And we'll just, you know, get nice and fat at a movie. It's fun times. But we can also mix that with the popcorn.
And all these restaurants.
And all the restaurants. Yeah.
Listen, food was meant to be enjoyed.
Exactly. No one's going hungry here in Vegas. That's all I can say.
Or starve for entertainment.
Yes. You're being fulfilled.
Okay. So last one, since you're out in that area, Grand Canyon or Bryce Canyon?
You know, I haven't been to Bryce Canyon. I've heard amazing things. Grand Canyon, it's one of the natural wonders of the world. Yeah. How can you not? You have to go see it, I think, at least once in your lifetime. And you can take a helicopter from Vegas to the Grand Canyon. It's 45 minutes. And they'll if you want to, you can get a celebrity chef to come out and cater you a meal on the side of the Grand Canyon.
In the helicopter?
Yeah.
Oh, on the side of the Grand Canyon. Mm-hmm. That's hilarious.
Yeah. Hmm. So there you go. There's, you could ride a little donkey down the Grand Canyon if you want. And there's
that sounds terrifying. I'm picturing like a walkway that is approximately 2 feet wide and the donkey's hoof is just like slipping over the edge. I've watched too many movies.
There you go. Yeah, that's true.
Too many movies.
But yes, Grand Canyon, I think, it's a must-see at some point in your life.
Yeah. Yeah. Unless, hold on. You know, I might have asked that wrong. Is Bryce the one that you are at the bottom, or am I thinking of Zion? Which is the one that you're at the bottom.
Thinking of Zion.
I might have been thinking of Zion Canyon.
Zion is also beautiful. I haven't been there either, so I'm still a terrible answer for this. I'm going to still stick with Grand Canyon. Natural wonder of the world. I'm a big fan of knocking those off my list. So
yeah. Yeah. If you guys are headed out there, I've been to both and, it was,
I apologize.
I misspoke because I think it's Zion that you're at the bottom. Zion was probably preferable for me only because I felt like you got a greater sense of the depth and the grandeur of it from the bottom looking up. Where when you stand at the top of the Grand Canyon, it's like you lose perspective because it's, for some reason, it's harder to appreciate the depth from the top down than it was from the bottom up. They're all, you're right, that. They're all amazing. That. It's beautiful.
And we also have, Vegas has one of the top five rock climbing destinations in North America.
Interesting.
Yeah. So out at Red Rock. So if you're into that, there's some incredible rock climbing and hiking to be had out that way. You know, Vegas, I think it's a bad rap because of movies and just old stereotypes, but I've become a bigger fan of living here as I've gotten older. Just, it's such an easy international airport hub. Mm-hmm. It's 4.5 hours to LA. It's 4 hours up to Utah. You know, it's a pretty central location. Everybody comes here for something. We've had the Grammys. We have the Billboard Awards. We have the anything and everything. ACMs will come through here at some point in time. All of your favorite entertainers will come in. We get the best celebrity chefs that are opening up restaurants. There's incredible shows to go see. You're going to have world-class dining experiences and accommodations, and I'm becoming more and more
also not paid for by the Las Vegas government. Although
the Las Vegas Convention and Visitors Authority should sponsor me. So I'll need to get on
up
that.
Hillary
Billings. We'll send them this as a little test.
Exactly right. Come on. Here we go. Vegas is your next travel stop.
I guess it's as a former Miss Nevada, you kind of have to put it out there.
That's exactly right. Well, you're doing a fabulous job of it. If people aren't convinced, they should visit Las Vegas. No, they are. You mentioned earlier, you said something about so much has been a happy accident for you, which, yeah, it's so true. Oftentimes, I mean, I have testimony of this in my own life where there is this sort of happy sense of, what's that old phrase, that success is when preparation meets opportunity type of a thing. It's like the key is not necessarily having it all mapped out, but, or looking even for like success. It's almost just, are you ready for it? Are you prepared for when that opportunity comes about? And you are a wonderful testimony of that, of faithfully working with each day that you've been given. And then you take the opportunities that come and here's where you end up. So that I want to point out, lesson number one from Hillary Billings' story is, if you feel like success is just out of reach, you never know what tomorrow holds. Just be faithful for what's coming today and success may be just around the corner. That being said, what I love about what you are here to teach us is that viral content, unlike the sense of a lot of it is often a happy accident, in this case, there's actually a science behind it. And you guys have content go viral frequently. In case you guys miss this, she is a billionaire in views. She's a billionaire viewer. That basically means her video content has had, what is it, right? Am I wrong about that? Over like a billion views now.
Over a billion views organically. Yeah. I wish
that only happens when you have viral content.
But one day I'll be the other type of billionaire, maybe. But yes, we are view count billionaires, which is wild.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about this content of, clearly you have a different approach than I do. So tell us a little bit about the science behind going viral. And then I want to dive into a proprietary process that they call the 3 V's of virility, which is not the new marketing scheme for Viagra, although the company might want to take notes.
We need a better title for this, I think.
I love it. No, I love it. Keep it, because it made me smile when I read it. I was like, this is an awesome, awesome title. Yeah. But tell us a little bit about the science behind going viral and then the three V's of video virility. Virality.
Virility. You know, something virality. I want to touch on that you said that I think is massively important for anyone's success in life. And when I go to universities or to schools to talk about this, I always talk about this because I feel like what has happened in our culture is, and hopefully the next generation, I feel like they're a little bit more aware of this than we were when we were growing up. But there's this expectation that at some point we're just going to figure it out and success is going to be there. Mm. And once we've done that, we know everything. Everything has been figured out and life is cake from there. And what I've found is that the way that success finds me is by one, being open to the opportunity, having that preparation, but also recognizing what skills I have been creating, I've been honing that allow me to jump to the next level or jump to the next thing. So, you know, when I said yes to working for USA Today, I had zero journalism experience, but I had a lot of writing experience and I knew I was a strong writer. I had blog readers in over 100 countries. I didn't know what to do with them. I loved the idea of being with a credible outlet like USA Today, and they were willing to help teach me and mentor me through that process. But I, at that point, I had zero journalism experience, and women specifically, we will not apply for a job if we don't meet 100% of the qualifications. Scientifically, this is true. Men will apply for a job if they only meet 60% of the qualifications. So if you ever wonder why the guy that you're working with doesn't seem like he knows what he's doing, it's because he's decided it's okay to learn on the job. And we as women don't give ourselves that grace. Mm-hmm. So I think being very aware of the skills that you're learning, that you're picking up, you know, when I was doing work in brand strategy, and so much of my background in journalism and my background in psychology was allowing me to help clients to figure out how to best position themselves. And then being able to roll that into viral video creation of the, you know, understanding the psychology of people and why people do what they do. Understanding, you know, great headlines or what makes a great article or even what makes a great video, because we were setting up all of these red carpet and was doing all the editing for these videos and how to put that together. So keeping that in mind when you're looking at your own life, what are the skills that you have that are compatible? Don't look at the job title, but look at what skills do you have that are compounding, that allow you to look at what opportunities might be in front of you. And I think that's opened a lot of doors for me that otherwise I wouldn't have walked through, because I wouldn't have considered myself to be credible enough to make that happen.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And just remembering too, for those of you listening, that the success and the definition is not what ultimately creates your worth. Hillary, you know, alluded to this earlier, but as you have all heard me say many, many times, you cannot add to or detract from your worth. You were infused with infinite worth the moment you were knit together in your mother's womb. You are infinitely valuable as you are today or as you are 60 days from now. So again, amen. It's all about redevelopment. You can't be redefined, and you just simply live out of that amazing value that you have, and you take it one imperfect day at a time. So I love that you pointed that out.
I'm here for it. Preach. Preach, sister, preach. So moving on to virality. Yeah, virality. Let's talk about
stuck on that word.
Here how we go. To go viral. Gosh, I wish we had better terms for these. One day we will. I also really
I love it. I love virility. It's strong. It's good. I'm like, my eyebrows shoot up. Okay, let's go.
So that's a big part of it. When we started making these videos and were able to consistently get views again and again and again, and we realized that we were, you know, even before Marshall joined, he had created essentially a viral video story map. I had him sit down and he watched hundreds and hundreds of viral videos, and he was able to distill out the aspects that went into a video. And in fact, if any of you guys that are listening would like a copy of our viral video story map, you can go to attentioneers.com and we are giving that out for free. It will give you all of the different components that you need to ensure that you're thinking about your video to have the most viral potential.
Love that.
So you get that when you sign that.
That will be in the link in our description, by the way, guys. So you can get that immediately. Love it.
Yes. So we realized fairly early on that there was a formula for how we needed to set up the videos for the most success, especially with short form content, because it's very different than how most people watch things. And just for perspective, like even huge studios right now are basing their decisions as to whether or not they are renewing seasons of shows that you like based upon watch time. So we, as we were looking at all the different factors that go into what makes a video go viral, the biggest component for us is how long did somebody watch that video? And we do a lot of things to adjust that, but that is the main marker that we are always going for, that we want to be thinking about. How can we increase the watch time and the watchability of this video? And I think that's so important because oftentimes when we meet creators and personal brands and even companies, there's this assumption that people should want to watch their content and like, oh, I do this amazing thing at the end and there's this great twist or I've got such great value. And right. You do, but you're not making it, you're not thinking about what's going to get them to stop the scroll. Like you have to remember, we are bombarded with so many hours of entertainment every single day on so many apps, from TikTok to YouTube to Instagram to Facebook to Twitter to Be Real to Reddit to, you know, Netflix and Hulu and Apple and Disney Plus. And then, you know, you've got your phone and you've got messages and you've got FaceTime and you've got WhatsApp. And then, I mean, and God forbid your emails. And then you got to have your business and you've got kids and your family members. And there is so much noise happening all the time. I think it was IBM. I wish they would update this study. I think it was in 2017. They released a study that 90% of the world's content was made in the past 2 years. So that was in 2017, right? Before the whole TikTok phenomenon even started. So if you can imagine what that number is up to now, in comparison to the hundreds of years that we have been recording things, thousands of years that we've had recordings as humans, 90% we've made in 2 years. So,
well, to your point, people aren't as willing to sit down and watch hours and hours of content, which, you know, you alluded to. So I love this concept of just reminding yourself, if you're a video content creator, that you can no longer assume people are just going to sit, because you're right, all one swipe and they can be on to thousands of other videos. So I love that. So what have you found basically is keeping people watching?
Well, for starters, you have like, to your point, you have 3 seconds. You have 3 seconds to get someone to decide whether or not they're going to keep watching. And then you have about 10 to 15 seconds to convince them to keep watching. And I will tell you this, like in all of my years of making videos, there is no such thing as somebody watching the thing all the way through. Like pretty much very few people are going to do that. So you want to keep that in mind when you're making content.
So save your best for first.
Exactly. We want to start with the best.
You got 15 seconds.
And we want to think about, what do they want to see? I think oftentimes, the harsh reality is that you have to earn attention. Nobody is going to give you their attention and you don't deserve it. Now, you're deserving and worthy within yourself and you've got a lot of value. But when it comes to your content, and this goes for your website, this goes for your podcast, this goes for your speaking engagements, everything, your book, you have to convince them that this is worth their time. And they have so many other things that they can be doing. So you really got to make an effort. And so the biggest mistake that we see people make right off the bat, especially on a new platform like a TikTok or Instagram Reels, is, well, I'm just going to throw something up. Like, I don't have the time. And by the way, I was avidly against getting on TikTok when I started. I did not want another platform. Do not make me do something else. I am exhausted. This is a lot of work. And I did not want to have to put in the effort. And the only reason that I did is because we had a glitch issue happening that week on Facebook. And I was watching my video views skyrocket and my money was nowhere to be seen. And so I couldn't stand looking to see, because there was an issue on the back end of Facebook, that we were not making money off of these videos. So I decided to pour some time into playing around with TikTok. It is the only reason I got on the app to begin with. However, you know, it's now the foundation and basis as to how we look at content because of that happy accident again.
Yeah.
So the haphazard approach, like think about it with anything. You would never put haphazard intention into your relationship. You would never put haphazard approach into your sales funnel. And if you did, you would probably not be surprised to find that it's not performing at optimal peak level. I often say that your profile pages and social media are a lot like your body. They're going to have cycles of health. And what are you doing to help put that page into optimal page health. You're going to have times where your, you know, your personal health goes down. You would not expect after you spent weeks of eating junk food and laying on the couch and maybe you've had COVID that you would get up and run a marathon and perform. And oftentimes people expect that after they have abused their profiles for months or years that, you know, something should just pop off. And then if they happen to have a video that does well, they don't know why, because they don't know which components to look at that made it successful. So then they end up just trying to recreate that same video again and again,
which
sometimes works, but again, they don't know why. So it's hard to keep that success going.
Right. It's like just throwing, kind of throwing something up on the wall. Do you think that first 3 seconds, I have to ask, do you think that first 3 seconds is the caption or the title? Like when I'm thinking as I'm scrolling through videos, I think for me, that first 3 seconds is that like text that's across the video, which is probably the title ultimately. I feel like that's initially what's capturing me in the first 3 seconds. Would you say that's accurate?
So what I love about this question is that you're starting to think in terms of a content creator. So what you're asking is you're asking the right question. Instead of asking, how can something go viral that I make? It's how can I make this video more watchable? How can I stop the scroll? How can I improve the quality of this video? And so that's a great question to be asking. The answer is it depends. Yes, that can be a tool that we use to help stop the scroll. It's if it's a really great title, if the colors are right, if the positioning is correct. You know, we often talk about wanting to be very visual in our videos because we never want to be reliant upon having to tell, having something to be explained in context that isn't immediately apparent in the video. Right. So thinking about that as well, of like, how can we make the story so crystal clear with as little explanation as possible? Because if we have to explain, then we're losing people. And also thinking about your market and your target demographic, right? What do they care about? What are they going to want to know about? How can you? And it's oftentimes not changing the content. It's just changing the delivery.
It's making it clearer.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was what I'm hearing you say is basically, and we're in a similar group. So I'm quoting somebody else right now, but clear is better than clever oftentimes.
Yes. Oh, always.
Yeah.
And we often, you know, we talk about, we want to be clear over being realistic as well. So even though you're like, oh, well, I might not do this in real life, or, you know, let's say that you've got, this is a bad example, but you've got your coffee. It's like, well, this is the color of my coffee. Well, this isn't very visually appealing, right? So how can I make this, or how can I make the fact that I'm drinking coffee, maybe it's a giant cup that says coffee on it. How can I make this, even though that might not be how I normally take my coffee, if this is something that I'm going to include
in my video.
It's
storytelling. You're storytelling with much more clarity and adding extra layers that in real life you might not need, but across a video you need to give a little bit more help.
It's intentional storytelling, and just by focusing on that and again asking better questions to get better answers, the quality of your videos is going to up, and then you're going to be able to start looking at the data to see what's working and what's not, where are you losing people, and then you can go back and I think another thing that's very difficult for personal brands and people that are creating content that's so close to their heart and that they care about is that they take every response or rejection so personally. And as a content creator, we have to get away from that. This is no different than looking at the back end of your funnel or looking at the back end of your email list and saying, okay, when did people hop off the funnel? When, you know, what's happening there? When did they stop? Did they click on this? Why is it because my lead magnet isn't good enough? Where in the buying process didn't they complete it?
Ladies, it's data over emotions is what she's saying.
Yes,
data over emotions. We want to be data driven here, not emotionally driven. Emotions are beautiful and have their place, but you got to approach it as a business strategy. Look at the data.
Because at the end of the day, you have an opportunity. The cool thing about social media and what short form content, and again, like everyone is playing catch up with TikTok right now. They are putting together the short form ability to share short form content on their platforms because they're trying to capture that audience. TikTok has now overtaken Google as the number one search engine for millennial and Gen Zers. That's huge. This hasn't happened in 20 years where something has outperformed Google, and that was Yahoo, and they weren't able to do it since. And TikTok is not letting go of that. And they are now priming their app in such a way where you can have longer captions, you can have more hashtags, so people can search by that. So that's what we want to do, is making sure that we're thinking about it in terms of how we can leverage this giant opportunity and this huge reach and audience that we might not be able to have done otherwise.
You mentioned color. I heard you say color and positioning, and I'm just curious, was that in relationship to the text that we are overlaying over our videos? Is there the color, is that dependent on your audience, or is there science behind the colors that are there that you should basically be putting on all your short form text?
There is science behind the colors that you use. It is not necessarily dependent upon audiences. There is science behind the colors and the saturation that you have within the video itself.
Mm. I'm curious, because I used to do this with Pinterest, because Pinterest is basically a billboard. So you want bright. I was making it all cute and pretty. And then I did research and I was like, oh, forget that. Like, it needs to be bright and obnoxious.
Yes.
So like yellow, think McDonald's, like yellow, red, orange for food, for desserts. Ironically, you want like more pastels. I thought that was interesting. Mm-hmm. But so I'm curious, with this concept, what colors ultimately should we be using for our text?
Yeah. So, and you'll see a lot of creators that do this. And, you know, if you go and even just scroll through TikTok or you go to Instagram and you look at personal brands that are doing this well, that are utilizing captions and maybe they're highlighting words. It's kind of like a sing-along that we had in, you know, Disney in the 90s. Mm-hmm. But they are using a bright color. Maybe it's a lime green or a bright red or a blue or a turquoise or something in that bright color family to denote what you should be looking at. And again, you want to, Mr. Beast does this a lot too, right? He'll use arrows and circles and thumbnails or in his videos to point to what he wants you to focus on. And again, thinking about this is a visual medium, and TikTok has come out to say numerous times that it is not a social media platform. It is an entertainment platform. So how is your content bringing in that entertainment? And part of that is the colors that you choose, the background, the colors that you wear. All of these things we want to take into consideration, which gets into the third V of the three Vs of virality, which is viral potential. So how are we setting up the video in such a way where it's more prone to go viral? Looking at, is this in the right format for this particular platform? Nothing bothers me more than somebody repurposing a piece of content for Instagram that was shot in square, or, you know, a 9x12 that was shot for YouTube, and throwing it up on TikTok or throwing it up on Reels because it was not meant to be in that format. And the algorithm will deprioritize that content. And you see it. If people are utilizing that type of format on that platform, their views will be terrible on those in comparison to something that's in the correct format for that platform. Mm. So that's the third V. But backing it up, getting into the first two, the first thing you want to look at, which surprisingly gets skipped a lot, are the values. What are the values that you have as a brand, as a personal brand, as a company, that we want to make sure are coming across in your content? And when we talk to brands or we talk to personal brands, we often hear, well, I don't want to dance. Like, I do not want to dance, so therefore I shouldn't be doing short form content.
That should just be your website tagline right there. How to make a video go viral without having to dance.
There you go. No dancing required. And this is a big part of it, is that people and personal brands and companies that do this well are able to incorporate the values that matter to them into their content, even if they're never actually talking about what their business does. Duolingo does this so well. Right? Duolingo has created millions of followers on their TikTok, and it is just their cute little bird mascot duo doing sassy bird mascot things. And they never really talk about the fact that they're a language learning app. But because of this following and the fact that they are highlighting the values that matter to them, they have created such a loyal fan base and audience that is now going to that platform, which is so special. And the next thing we want to look at, so first we want to establish those values. What are those three core values that we want to make sure come across in the content? We're never going
to
have...
Just to make sure that I'm understanding you correctly, and tell me if I am spitting this back incorrectly, is I'm hearing you say that when you're creating these videos, one of the keys is making sure that you know what will ultimately speak to your target audience. So the people who are showing up to watch your content. So for me, you know, everyone here obviously knows my heartbeat, but it's, you know, it doesn't all have to be like fitness nutrition related. It could, you know, simply be sharing my kids doing something silly, but showing the healthy, happy home environment that is going to speak to many of the women who are here for yes. their hearts and homes, because that is going to be a similar message that is going to speak to their hearts, even though it is not specifically an educational piece on, you know, budget home decor to love your home more, or how to get more energy by losing, you know, excess fat or whatever. Am I hearing that correctly? Like,
yeah.
So speak again, to your audience.
So if we're using the example of health and wellness as being a value, and so then, yes, you might have videos that are tutorials or educational or informational. And, you know, here's what you need to know about gut health. Here's the supplements you need to have. Here's the workouts you should be doing. Here's the recipes. But outside of that, there's other genres, we call them video formulas, that you can use that would allow you to also convey your health and wellness. And that's you going on a hike. That's you, you know, talking about meditation or showing a meditation practice. That's you spending time with your family and you guys are making a meal together, or talking about how you're ordering some healthier fast food for them. You know, there's lots of different ways to approach it that all convey that you have a value of health and wellness. And then maybe there's another value of family. And so we're seeing that by your inclusion of your family, or what you're buying them, or how you're thinking about them, or the different preparations that you're putting together for the holidays, or even under the wellness, it could be how to deal with stress or holiday stress, or going to see your in-laws that you might not have the best relationship with. So being able to look at what are all the different ways, once we know what those values are, what are all the different ways that we can showcase
that,
and use a video formula to help make this more pressure-free for you when it comes to posting. So that's the first piece, is what are those values? We're going to try to land on three. And then we're going to want to put together a long list of all the different ways that we could potentially talk about those values in content. Then we talk to our clients about voice. What's the tonality that you want this account to have? The cool thing about TikTok and most short form content mediums is that the audience wants the brand, wants your personal brand to be more relatable than it would in traditional long form content. So if you're doing long YouTubes or even on a podcast, that might be a more serious tonality. But in short form, what they expect and what they want is for you to be relatable to them. So you get to have more fun here. So the voice that you have on this platform or in this medium might be vastly different from how you guys are approaching LinkedIn, or might be vastly different from how you're approaching Twitter. And so is it sassy? Is it, you know, compassionate? Is it wholesome? And then we're using that to also inform the video formulas and how we're setting up those videos. So first we have the values, then we have the voice, and then we take those and say, okay, based upon that and these different types of video formulas that we're creating, what has the most viral potential and how can we create that viral potential through all that we know on the science of psychology of attention and the psychology of viral videos, and put all that together to create a unique viewing experience for your audience.
I love that. I love that. What are some, so practically speaking, give a couple tips for people who are currently creating, like short content creators, really, like short film content creators, which could be, I mean, the genre is vast. The niches are many. What practical tips would you give somebody, whether it be the color of their text, the positioning of their text? Should they be doing text in addition to just captioning what they're saying? Is there, you mentioned saturation of the video in terms of, is it brighter with more contrast, or is it actually lighter and slightly faded? Is it super sharp and crisp and clear? What would just be a couple like practical takeaways that somebody could start implementing today to make a better video?
So I think it's important for you to understand what's working in your industry. And we do this for our clients that come on that we work with, is we'll go do this research and we'll pull all this together to see what's working. And then from there, determine how we want to utilize the values, the voice, and the viral potential to create something that's unique to their story. But the best thing that you can do if you don't have access to a company like Attentioneers is, first, I would go start searching by hashtags that you want to be known for or want to be found through, especially on TikTok. Because here's the cool thing. Again, Google is now cataloging TikToks in its search engine. TikTok itself is now becoming known as a search engine. So we want to be thinking about this again on the front end before we even start creating content. So go look at the hashtags that you potentially want to be known for in your industry. And then what you're going to do is you're going to go to the top of your profile. Once you pull that up, there should be a filter tab. And you're going to click that filter tab. And in that filter tab, you're going to go and click most liked or most viewed videos. And you can select for when, in the past week, in the past 30 days, in the past year of all time. And I would start with all time. It might not be as relevant right now for the algorithm conversation, but it will definitely give you a good idea as to what works in your market.
In your niche,
and yeah. So then go look at those videos and say, okay, how are they setting up this? Are there particular creators that are consistently getting good views and good engagement? And again, we're looking at this from a science perspective and a data perspective. How are they opening their videos? How long are these videos? What are they asking people to do in their videos? Are they? What are the topics about? What are the titles? What do their thumbnails look like? What do the captions look like? How do they edit this? We know from insights that, you know, TikTok has provided that videos that have five or more clips are more likely to do better than videos that have less or one single shot, right? So even thinking about that is how many clips are in a video? How can
I more movement you're saying basically. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you'll also notice this just in movies in general now. Mm-hmm. Like if you go back and watch a movie from the 90s or, you know, even beyond 80s or 70s or 60s, yep. There is a much longer timeline to be able to set something up than if you watch a movie from 2020 to 2022. We are moving super quick and there are a lot of shots and a lot is happening.
So many shots. Yep.
And you have to remember that this part of this is because our brain structure has changed, right? Our ability to pay attention has gone down significantly. And so if you want to be able to reach your audience and have them watch, we have to make content that fits within their preference for how they watch now. So again, how can we lead with the best for first, right? Who's doing well in your industry? How are they doing it well? What are the different factors that you might want to play with that could help you figure this out as you experiment with your content? And then have you mapped out your voice, your values? And then also thinking through, this is a huge piece, which most people don't think about when it comes to the virality of videos, but where are we sending them? And is this content something that is going to convert people to a follower, that is going to convert someone to a sale? So if you go viral for a really cute fall DIY video, but your platform is, or your business is around graphic design, that might not see the conversions. You know, it might be a disconnect from that. Versus if your videos are more around, you know, you doing some great graphic design. So how can we set up the content to support you in a way so when people see it and they follow you, they know what to expect. And then that leads to an easier conversion for you down the road.
Yeah. So, and I love what you said there, because that's something that I've personally been working on, is starting to really recognize that each platform has different super strengths. And knowing that, you know, as when I started as a blogger, the key was always getting people to your blog, because now you're generating ad revenue. But the problem was, I took a deep dive. Again, data, you guys, is so essential. I took a deep dive to Instagram and I was like, nobody is clicking to my blog from Instagram. And it was like 1 month that I was doing, I got more traffic from Twitter, and I don't even have a Twitter account. And that was because my podcast guests were sharing on their Twitter. So I was getting more traffic from Twitter that I don't even have an account on. So I am now setting myself up differently for 2023 to recognize that Instagram, the power of it is really people want to stay on the platform. And it, to your point, within the niche, for me, it's like educational. I'm basically offering people value on the platform. I'm not routinely trying to take them off of it. So I want to increase reach and certainly influence and offer a lot of value for the people that are there. And then once in a while, when I have a big launch or something, now I have this audience that I can put it in front of. And in theory, that should convert because they, you know, trust me or whatever. Pinterest, on the other hand, totally different story. It is all about click-throughs. Pinterest is like the superpower that nobody uses, but that's all about clicking through. So there, the strategy is, you're not building relationships there. You're getting people to click because they want instant information. And these are doers. People on Pinterest are doers and buyers. So anyway, to your point though, I love what you said, is know your platform, know the goal of the video on the platform, because every platform is different. Side note for anyone wondering as well, Facebook, people are more likely to click through. So take your links off of Instagram, keep links on Facebook, at least in my
experience. With Twitter. Twitter or not Twitter, TikTok users are more apt to click through. They're more apt to go. They're more apt to buy something that they see on TikTok. They're a very engaged audience in comparison to some of the other platforms
that
as well.
Really, so interesting.
Yeah, there's, I think it's really important for you to know, and then where your audience is living. I am not a believer in being everywhere all at once. I think that is the number one strategy for burnout and for hating your life as a content creator, even just as a business owner. And like, pick the ones that are working for you. And being able to expand and land and expand with that, we found brands that are not on TikTok that already have a huge presence on there because people love their product so much, but they're afraid or not willing to get on the platform. And to me, I see that as a huge missed opportunity because your audience will tell you based upon the data where they are and how they want to be communicated with. And if you are choosing to not enter that conversation, that's a choice, but that conversation is happening with or without you. And, you know, in a situation, I think we've all seen the Ocean Spray cranberry video, right? 90 years, Ocean Spray had the same marketing strategy of the guys in the field with their cranberries. This is our brand. And one video that they didn't even make, right? It was a user generated piece of content. 15 billion impressions later, increased their sales by 78% year over year. Now that is a unicorn situation that we can all hope to have happen. But again, thinking about the power and the reach that a great piece of short form content can have, if done in the right way, if put on the right platform, you know, it can help make you and your brand and your business a culturally relevant moment. So it's important for you to know where your audience wants to be communicated with and where they are and go after them there.
Yeah, I love that. And have your infrastructure set up, which is what Hillary has alluded to. You need to do the not sexy work first. What I love about your company is it's not just about, okay, let's throw up videos.
Right.
And hope they go viral. You're going to help people do the hard work to actually create continued success, which is what you want. So
absolutely.
Tell people really quickly, you've already highlighted a lot of what you guys do, but really quick, tell people why they need to work with Attentioneers.
For Attentioneers, if you are serious about content and especially short form content and want to create a very specific viral strategy, we can help you with that. We help with ideation sessions. We do something called remote creative direction sessions where we direct you from our living rooms. We FaceTime, we Zoom, we can text, and we see.
I love that.
Huge improvements, like 240x results when we're able to help people through this. We also provide workshops and trainings for your team, boot camps. So we are here to help you make better viral content, to help improve your watch times and just become culturally relevant in your space through short form. So attentioneers.com, you can schedule a free strategy call with us at any point in time and go get that viral video story map to help get you started.
I love it. Attentioneers.com. That will be in the description. And we'll have that if you're watching on YouTube. It'll certainly be in the description below. Otherwise, on the blog post. Hillary, I pray God's blessing over your business, over your heart and home, over your sweet course and all your experiences and your wonderful, wonderful example of, faithfully taking every day. And you never know. You never know what tomorrow will hold, but thank you for the way that you are continuing to inspire and change lives. It was such an honor to have you.
Oh, I appreciate being here. This was so much fun. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Imperfectly Empowered Podcast. I would love to hear your thoughts from today. Head to your preferred podcasting platform and give the show an honest review and let me know what you think. Remember, you cannot be redefined, only redeveloped one imperfect day at a time. Your story matters and you are loved.